With cyber attacks on the rise, protecting your data security is more important than ever. So why is Congress considering a bill that puts your credit card data at greater risk of being hacked and exposed to foreign networks? The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill shifts billions in consumer spending to less secure payment networks, all so that corporate megastores can make bigger profits. Don't let Durbin-Marshall steal your data. Visit electronicpaymentscoalition.org and tell your senators to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Watching a person
hitting
cops with a water jug.
There are people that want to learn and go to school who cannot, because you'd rather cede the campus to people who empathize with terrorists.
These are such pampered little bitches.
It's time for King of the Hill.
If Election Day was Tuesday, Donald Trump's the president of the United States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted?
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Just a catching strays over here.
You're in for a hell of a show.
Keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs.
It's time for our main.
Welcome back to another high-energy program here on a big Thursday at the Ruthless Variety program. A lot to talk about. It's been a big week here in Washington, D.C., and in the body politic overall. You know how we like to keep with our motif about things that are happening that Biden says, that Kamala says, that frankly defy explanation.
Yeah, this one's a whopper, though.
So what I'd like to do is go right to a clip. Let's just get right to a clip.
A little table setter.
Yeah, real table setter. Let's get clip one going here.
The anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians and how they're being...
Should the Columbia University president resign?
Right this way.
I didn't know that. I'll find out more.
Fair. I didn't know that.
So, very fine people on both sides, fellas. Very fine people on both sides.
I've been reliably told you can't say that sort of thing in politics.
Well, I was told, I think pretty clearly, that was inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But now it appears to be, well, not even followed up upon.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is like every journo there did not recognize in that second. And these are the same journos who years ago freaked out, saying Trump said very fine people on both sides. My God, help us. This is white supremacy in the White House. We were told that, and they had the biggest flip out.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of many, but it was early on. It was the biggest one at the time. And he drops that. No pushback.
Mm-hmm. So the basically the inference, which all the reporters were all over, was at the time Donald Trump, the inference was, well, he's courting a white supremacist base of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Something that nobody should try to court in American politics, which, of course, is untrue. They mischaracterized all of that. That's a time for another day. We can revisit that at some point. But what Biden was doing was actually just that.
100%.
Just that. You're seeing protests across this country of people calling not for two-state solutions, not for ceasefires, but for the elimination of the Jewish people, for the elimination of Israel, for a pro-Hamas, waving Hamas flags. And he's like, well, of course I condemn anti-Semitism, but I also condemn those who don't understand the plight of the Palestinian people.
Josh, I think we call that a false equivalency.
Well, it seems like it, Michael. Yeah. It sure seems like it.
Gosh, you hate to see that.
Boy, you hate to see it. But I mean, the larger story that we've talked about at significant length on this in this program is that Hamas has a constituency in the Democratic Party, and even worse, that Joe Biden and this administration have concluded they can't get reelected without it.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And there was new polling which came out today, which has shown that Biden's poll numbers have slipped, that Trump is now leading him in all but, I believe, one swing state. And a lot of that is being attributed to a significant portion of the Democratic base being like, why are you not siding with Hamas?
See, I think that's part of it, Smug, but I think there's another part of it, too, that for, like, the middle of the electorate, the inability of Joe Biden and Democrats in Congress to, like, condemn the obviously racist, anti-Semitic stuff that's happening in our country right now is a clarifying moment for a lot of people who are in the middle of our country. And like, you see it not just with Joe Biden there in that clip, but you see it on Capitol Hill. You know, I mean, I know there was a lot of reporters who made a living during Donald Trump's administration, you know, chasing them through the halls of Congress to read out tweets. And now you've got, I think, what is 1,000 times worse than inelegant tweets. You've got protesters on college campuses, you know, chanting "Death to America," and you've got AOC who gets confronted with that on Capitol Hill, and is like, "Oh, you know what? I haven't seen the reports,
Michael."
It's like, you don't have to see the reports; you could just be like, "That's not right."
it's not just AOC on Capitol Hill, and these protests are not going on only on certain Ivy League college campuses. They're actually happening all over the country, including the University of Minnesota. Oh. And do you know who showed up at one of these things at the University of Minnesota?
I would wager a guess.
Ilhan Omar.
Wow. Yep.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
I didn't even hear about this.
Even though her daughter is homeless and starving.
On the streets of New York City, yeah.
She is making speeches at these, like, terrorist events. And I don't understand for the life of me why everybody just sort of treats her like, remember when they were, like, so upset that we were normalizing Trump? We can't normalize him as the elected president of the United States. What about normalizing Ilhan Omar speaking at these terrorist events?
Yeah. Are you going to apologize that she showed up in Minnesota, Holmes?
Oh, should I apologize for Ilhan? Absolutely.
I think you should. You think you're embarrassing the Big Ten as the official Big Ten pilled member.
I'm humiliated
of the Variety program. I feel like I have to confront you about that.
I'm humiliated by it.
And I mean, that's the thing. It's one thing of how across college campuses you have kids chanting this insane stuff like "Death to America." You had a chant. I think we showed the video clip in our previous show of these are students chanting that, like, we need more October 7th.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And then it's another when you have elected officials.
Right.
Elected officials supporting this.
Right. Again, there's a big difference between "Death to America" and 5440 or fight. You know what I mean? Like, "Death to America" and "We need a $20 minimum wage." Like, they're two totally different things, and yet the press treats it like it's the same deal. Like, oh, they're so concerned. And
I want to get to a bunch of clips here, but there's something that's just been rattling my head, and I've wanted to say it here for like several weeks.
Say it.
And I think, like, I'm a huge opponent to false equivalence and historical equivalence with different fact patterns. But it's hard to ignore the parallels between a bunch of Hamas protesters blocking student entry and exit out of a major university in this country, a notable, you know, so-called elite university, and not draw parallels to, like, 1960s segregation stuff. And the idea that you've got a president who's seeing this unfold in real time on, I mean, we're told he watches a lot of cable television, so he's obviously aware of it. And his response to that is, yes, I condemn anti-Semitism. I mean, that's probably the easiest statement maybe any politician has ever made, ever.
Right.
But then to caveat it with, I also condemn those who don't understand the plight of the Palestinian people. The plight of the Palestinian people is not what's being litigated in this country. Mm-hmm. That's not what's happening. Like, what's happening in Gaza has everything to do with October 7, a government that they elected in Hamas that carried out attacks and murders and rapes and beheadings and everything else. And they're getting what they have coming to them, in my view. That's my view. What's happening in this country is a whole bunch of people sympathizing with the idea that not only should Hamas win that war, but they should eliminate the state of Israel and thereby the Jewish people altogether. And that's what they're saying. It's not inferred. It's on their signs.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying.
It's what Ashbrook always says, that they're not chanting two-state solution.
They're just not.
Right. Don't say ceasefire now on the sign.
They just don't.
Right.
And the idea that you would take that and to say, but you have to understand the other side of the argument, how is that fundamentally different from somebody saying, well, but you have to understand the plight of the racists?
It's not. This is a great, you're making a great point.
How is that fundamentally different? It's worse.
Right.
Because they're, it's like, this is calling for a genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be very clear, in case you just didn't understand what it is that Iran, Hamas, and Hezbollah wants, It is not a two-state solution. They've rejected a ceasefire three times in a row. Mm-hmm. They couldn't make a hostage deal because they killed all the fucking hostages. Mm-hmm. They want the elimination of the Israeli people, and they're doing it to Jewish students
right.
at these universities. And then we're saying, but we need to understand why it is that they're doing that. No, we don't.
I mean, that's the insane thing is, like, imagine if you had a president who, you know, 6 months after September 11th said, well, you know, here's the thing is, does anyone consider Bin Laden's grievances?
No, I mean, that's literally...
It's completely insane.
It's insane. And it's unbelievable. You got to see a couple more of these clips because it's just... I want to get back to another crazy thing that Joe Biden said, but we've got some more stuff that's just on topic that you got to see. Clip three, if you wouldn't mind, Spigats, if we can line that one up. So this is at Cal Poly, where students are attacking police during their quote-unquote occupation. And for those of you who are audio-only listeners,
banging,
you're watching a person hitting,
hitting cops
with a water jug, the kind that you find in an office cooler.
They're all masked, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, that is not a peaceful protest.
No.
Let's not pretend this is a peaceful protest. There's a police officer who's getting battered about the head by a water jug for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Let's go to clip four. These are protesters setting off flares.
I mean, it's fiery, but mostly peaceful.
Fiery, but mostly peaceful. Look at this.
Right.
And again... This is not an equal rights discussion. This is not a civil rights discussion. This is a protest about the elimination of Jewish people from the face of our planet. I want to be very clear about that.
Yeah. Also, the thing is that I see a very direct line between this and the summer of 2020, where essentially the left has planted in the heads of the youth, especially in this country, sprung forth from the campuses, that America is an evil place. America deserves to be completely destroyed. The American people, by and large, are irredeemable. Mm-hmm. They want to break everyone down by race and say, you're a white person, you were like born with sin, you're irredeemable, you're a black person, you're a victim, the white people have done this to you. Essentially, this is just that idea continuing. It's been not only allowed to continue, it's been... thriving, flourished.
Yeah.
Celebrities giving so much money to these groups and being like, oh, let's hold a concert to help support these people. You saw Kamala Harris, the vice president, telling everyone to donate to a bill fund to let people out who then went on to commit
murder.
More rapes and murders. This is insanity. And the left has been completely pushing this idea. It's been funded, of course, by left-wing dark money groups, which is the same reason you saw these tents pop up within seconds across campuses that are all like the standard green, white tent. It's like, huh, I wonder how this organic protest pops up overnight.
Yeah, they all went to Dick's and got the exact same Coleman tent,
right.
You know?
It's because they had the local left-wing group roll out and start paying people.
Yeah.
There were ads put on Craigslist of like, show up for this. You get paid $15 an hour.
Yeah.
If you want to wonder why it is that people who were Trump skeptical... Republicans, conservatives, but Trump skeptical. They voted for somebody else in the primary, didn't want to see a second Trump term. Why it is that they've gotten back on board? Consider all of this. Because there is no moral equivalence between Joe Biden, set his domestic policy disaster aside, whether it's borders, taxes, whatever. Set all that aside. Consider the fact that this person is willing to ignore a call for genocide of a people, not just a country in Israel, a people that exists around this world in order to try to triangulate an issue for re-election.
Yeah, so I think what Smug said there was so smart because it does expose this larger strategy of the left, and that is they pick one specific topic that they think can get broad support. You know, in 2020, no person wants to see somebody be exploited by the police or attacked by the police or killed by the police.
Unifying statement.
Unifying statement. what we got out of 2020 in the agenda of BLM was nobody should be in prison. Prison abolition, like an elimination of any bail, letting out people who are violent offenders back into our streets so they commit more crimes. We're seeing that again here now. Nobody wants to see Palestinians suffer. So that's what they initially say is like the plight of the Palestinians, as Joe Biden himself said. But that's not really what they want.
The only
what they
want, camel's nose under the tent.
Camel's nose under the tent. The real argument they're making is for the eradication of the state of Israel and the genocide of Jewish people. But that's not the first thing they say, mm-hmm. right? And that's my entire point is like this is the entire philosophy of these Marxists. That is how they operate.
They can't tell you what they want.
Right.
So they're not going to.
Nope.
They're going to find the one thing you can get 51% behind.
Yeah. And then they sneak in all the other stuff.
Oh, he's
and
just...
what they're hoping is that nobody notices that Hamas has their thumb on the Palestinians too.
Right.
Like nobody has treated the Palestinians worse than Hamas.
Nope.
Do you see what
they don't give a shit.
Do you see what they're doing with the aid?
There's
all this aid that's coming in and they're just like killing people who are trying to get to the aid.
They jump on the trucks with their guns. Yeah.
Well, I saw that they started opening up shops and they sell it.
Yeah.
Oh,
the aid that's getting dropped, they're just selling it.
You know, you guys want to see how Texas deals with this?
Let's go.
I hope.
Clip 4A, please. Spaghetti. Here we go. So what you're watching here is a bunch of law enforcement officers suited up, taking care of business. Taking care of business. This is in Austin, Texas, where they have a very similar rally to the one that you're seeing in Columbia and everywhere else. The only difference is they ain't having it.
No, they're clearing things out pretty well. That's what they do in Texas.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see some batons in action. You know?
I'd like to see a wielded baton.
You're like, I want violence. No, I you know, so new respect for UT Austin. I mean, Austin is a great town, but it's had some issues lately.
It's had some big issues. But, you know, just when you think you've seen it all, this happened in California at the University of Southern California, USC. 4B, please, Spaghetti. Cops are getting involved here, too. Another mass mob. And they're taking somebody out.
Huh.
So, I mean, this has become a law enforcement issue. But you see, the crowd's fighting the law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And right. Each and every one of these, they're fighting the law enforcement. I was, again, reliably told that that's not something we do here.
Oh, yeah. I was told that, you know, that's insurrection. You'd be thrown in the hole forever. Again, this is not a coincidence. This is such a well-funded movement by these left-wing groups. I mean, we saw it happen during summer of 2020, this whole, like, all these prosecutors that got put into place, no cash bail, people were getting arrested for assault back on the streets within hours. Mm-hmm. This is what happens, is you've created this culture of lawlessness. And this is what you get as a result of it. And it's being put in the heads of an entire generation of people. What's the most terrifying thing about it?
Smuck, I got a question for you. So, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm looking at all these things, and I follow, you know, I like true crime stuff.
Yes, I love true crime.
And you look at the way these things kind of play out where somebody hires a hitman, and they pay somebody to do a crime, whether they're killing somebody or doing whatever. And ultimately, the way that those shows always end is that the person who pays for the crime gets charged with the crime. Mm-hmm. You just talked about a lot of people, the Tide Center,
yes.
A lot of other things, paying for groups like this to commit crimes. Yeah. Why does that not follow?
I mean, that's a great question. So you've had really good journos. You've had Gabe Kaminsky, who's at the Washington Examiner. Yeah. You've had folks at the Free Beacon who've been uncovering a lot of this money coming in from, like you said, the Tide Center, Arabella Advisors, to these groups who are doing these things on campus. And the question being like, okay, well, if you're essentially funding people to go out there, get into these brawls with police, how are you not culpable?
Or chain themselves to bridges.
Right. We talked about this on the show last week, but like, how isn't there a prosecutor in one of these red states, like Texas, that can file RICO charges against George Soros and this whole dark money network.
Because ever there was a charge.
And like you said, it needs to be in a red state, because you had the Attorney General of Washington, D.C., who was asked to do an investigation of Arabella Advisors, one of the center spokes of this left-wing dark money.
All good, nothing to see here.
He spent 5 minutes on that. And he gets right back to investigating conservative groups.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you drive a car, don't drive it in D.C. because everyone knows you're going to get car jacked. I had a buddy, Elliot, great friend of the program, great friend of ours, who lives in Navy Yard. And there was a story in the news about a puppy that got shot in Navy Yard. It's that dire, dude. It is that dire. And so I said to Elliot, I was like, bro, I heard in the news a puppy got shot. And he's like, I didn't hear it in the news. I heard it.
What?
I was like, bro,
it's in his neighborhood.
You're listening to puppies getting shot?
Jesus.
And you're still there?
You got to get out of there, Elliot.
This is not Fallujah. This is America's capital, bro. Are you for real?
But if you doubted the sincerity of the protesters involved, let's see graphic one here. These are Yale students actually doxed police officers who responded to the protest.
I saw that.
We're obviously blurring out the names. We have no interest in redoxing anyone. But what these people did is, here are the names of the 17 Yale police and 4 New Haven police I've confirmed were on the scene and assisted in the effort to arrest peaceful student protesters today. And then they put all their personal information out there.
Yeah. And to me, this is especially egregious from Yale students, not only because this is, objectively horrible, but these are such pampered little bitches, because it's those police, New Haven police, Connecticut police, who keep them safe. If anyone has ever been to Yale, you've got this pretty campus full of these pampered bastards, and you walk 3 blocks away from campus and you're in New Haven, and there's people getting shot, there's people getting killed, there's crack being sold on the street. The only reason there's that circle of safety around Yale is because of these folks who they're going after. So, I said, if I were those cops, I'd pull back. Pull back.
Yeah, let it happen.
Yeah. That's what they want. These little pampered
bastards. You bought your ticket. You knew the risks. I say, let the plane crash.
Yeah.
No, but it reminds me a lot of, so when I went to school, Arizona State University,
much finer institution than Yale.
Fine institution. There used to be every, January or February, there was these groups that came around that sold packages for spring break, right? And they'd have these slideshows and be like, your whole fraternity, you can go for this low, low price and everybody should do it. And it's terrific. And one year we were yes. That sounds terrific. So we all loaded up and we went on this thing and they picked us up in a bus and we drove to this fucking hellhole in Mexico, right?
Was this Puerto Vallarta? Where are you going?
It was in the, what's the
Baja?
Baja.
Yeah.
It was somewhere in Baja. God, I don't even remember it. I don't remember it. But it was a real bait and switch. Yeah. This thing was not. Could we not interest the Palestinian protesters in some kind of an all-expense paid trip to Gaza where they could meet the oppressed?
Yeah.
Perhaps offer their counseling and assistance services. Offer them, perhaps new education on, trans living here in America, and then just see how it works out.
Well, that's a capital idea.
So
it's just a great idea.
What's such a good point about that is it is the people most removed from the actual situation in the Middle East with these luxury beliefs living in a place, like Yale, who can wax poetic about how they would fix the problems in Israel and in Gaza. Well, I guess my question back to those people is, why is it that the other Arab countries in the region agree with the position of Israel?
Yeah.
That there's nobody bending over backwards to come to the aid of the Palestinian people who elected Hamas and did October 7th. No, they're cutting treaties with Israel, the Abraham Accords, because there are actual people in leadership in some of these Arab countries who would like there to be a normal order in the Middle East. It's the Palestinians that elected Hamas, that are causing terrorism and violence in the Middle East. And it's not like these Arab countries and their neighbors are like, you know what? I think it's actually Israel's fault. That's not happening. They have more. They have more cultural purchase on America's college campuses than they do in the other nations in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. And it was like the meme came true. Egypt, they're like the wall just got 10 feet taller.
Yeah.
They have this beautiful wall that I wish America would build in Egypt, between Egypt and Gaza. And they, as soon as this attack goes down, they're like, make the wall taller, more fortified, because they know there's a reason that Iran is exploiting the plight of the Palestinian people. Hamas itself is exploiting the plight of the Palestinian people. They're beating them and selling them aid packages.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why do these college protesters not respect the lived experience of places like Egypt?
It's so good. So it turns out Columbia says classes will be hybrid until the semester ends. Mm. Interesting. I met a woman last night. A Jewish woman who, I asked her how her Passover was. She said a lot of tears, and I was like, I'm sorry to hear that. Like, how? Tell me about it. And she said, well, my daughter goes to Columbia.
Oof.
Mm.
And had experienced, obviously, a lot of the things that we've seen on screen about Jewish students and confronting all of this. And then, you know, I mean, I don't know what the tuition is at Columbia. It ain't cheap.
No, they're not giving it away.
And she has to leave campus.
Jeez.
Right? She's got to go at home and do remote learning for the rest of, I mean, it's like a COVID-style remote learning because you've allowed these terrorists to take over your school.
And that's what they are.
Willingly. And, you know, it just broke my heart.
Yeah.
You could see the
fucking
look in her eyes.
What a fucking indictment of higher education in our country.
Yep. Yeah.
That there are people that want to learn and go to school who cannot because you'd rather cede the campus to people who empathize with terrorists rather than their fellow classmates.
Yeah.
I mean, what a crazy country we live in.
And they're not like, oh, everybody should agree with me. Oh, my view should be everybody's view on campus. They just want to go to class.
That's it. Want to get a higher education.
The terrorists are like locking arms and dancing in front of them saying, oh, nope, you can't get in the library because you're Jewish. Like, why do we tolerate this? I don't know if you guys have seen this on like ABC, NBC, some of these networks. The way they cover this is completely outrageous.
Well, it's both sidesism.
It's
acting
awful.
As though there's two sides of this argument.
Right.
It is... like acting Montgomery, Alabama had two sides of that story.
Right.
That, well, why don't you understand the plight of the racists?
Right.
That is what this is. That is what the President of the United States is. And it's what the complicit corporate mainstream media has done as a result.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well said.
And it is absolutely disgusting. So Columbia responded to all of this, despite their institution being completely ravaged. Can we put up graphic 2? All right, so we are making important progress with representatives of the student encampment.
Mm.
Oh, because you have to negotiate with terrorism, right?
That's it.
Student protesters have committed to dismantling and removing a significant number of tents. A significant number of tents! Hmm. A significant number of tents!
Yeah, we're going to thin it out a little.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks for the density is what we were concerned with, so thank you. Student protesters will ensure that those not affiliated with Columbia will leave. Student protesters in the encampment will comply with all the requirements of the FDNY with respect to the activities and safety. What they ought to do is send the hockey players from the FDNY in there because they could get the job done damn quick. student protesters have taken steps to make the encampment welcome to all and have prohibited discriminatory or harassing language. Oh, they've prohibited it?
Mm.
They prohibit it. Hey, it's prohibited. Like, oh, well, that sign says death to America. Like,
what are you going to do?
Is that, it's prohibited.
Yeah, like the woman who held the sign that said Al-Qassam's next targets, pointing to her fellow students.
At Columbia?
At Columbia.
It's prohibited.
It's prohibited now. Okay.
It's prohibited,
all right,
Michael.
We'll see how long that lasts.
I just want you to know that it's all prohibited. Fucks.
You just know somebody in the HR department wrote all of this.
This is how they end it. In light of this constructive dialogue, the university will continue conversations for the next 48 hours.
Who's the fucking adult here? That's what I want to do. Like this whole thing reads like a hostage negotiator who's standing there with a bullhorn trying to talk somebody out of the bank.
Well, a hostage negotiator in which the guy with the gun to the hostage is also something we need to understand.
Yeah.
did you see the part where they're giving the terrorist credit?
What do you got here?
Student protesters have taken steps to make the encampment welcome to all and have prohibited discriminatory or harassing language.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah. We are living in bizarro land.
Right.
Bizarro. And the fact that this is a higher education institution, like, get them out of here. Right. Just defund the damn thing.
Seize the endowments.
Seize the endowments. Get it over with.
Send in the National Guard. We'll fight them there so we don't have to fight them here.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Smash. All right. So, listen, we're going to have a whole bunch of stuff. But before we get to it, I have a couple things that I want to say. First, we have new merch. We unveiled new hats a few weeks ago that went like...
Yeah, they were gone in hours.
Yeah. I mean, it was like 1 second and all of them were gone. So it occurred to the production assembly here on the Ruthless Variety program that we needed new golf hats. It's golf season.
It is.
Right? So Graphic H, if you wouldn't mind.
There they are.
Three different styles of golf hats.
Look at
all
that
with
graphic.
Some Ruthless stuff on it. You're going to want to get your hands on these. I am told we anticipate, based on the traffic that we had a few weeks ago with the last hat, these things are going to be gone in like...
Yeah, it's only fair to let the folks know that, I mean, it's we have a limited quantity, but we want everyone to know so you have a fair shot at getting it.
Yeah, so there it is. Have a look. Get on the website. If you want one, get one. Because
it's store.ruthlesspodcast.com.
That's it? Oh, listen to you.
I appreciate
listen
that,
to the professional
plug. You know, what I really appreciate is Smug plugged the subdomain.
Yeah, great work, Duncan.
He's all grown up, and he's all grown up.
Yeah.
All right, so coming up on Ruthless, we have King of the Hill, because it's a big Thursday. A little bit of talk about RFK and what he means versus Republicans and Democrats in the electorate and how that may have shifted a bit. Alec Baldwin. Got a little something with him. He's always in some kind of trouble, so we've got a little bit of something on that. And then we have a great guest, Martha Zoller. So we have talked a lot about the states that matter in a presidential election, and we endeavor to give you experts in each and every one. You heard from the RNC chairman, who was chairman of North Carolina GOP. He gave us a little insight into North Carolina. I feel pretty good about that. Georgia has been something that has gone not our way.
Yeah.
In the last few cycles, she is like Miss Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to hear from her at the end of the program and a lot more. So with all that, we'll be back right after this.
Americans for Prosperity has done it again. You're going to love this. Know how Biden's been running around the country bragging about Bidenomics? And the media's doing stories on how the president has embraced the term? Well, guess what? Americans for Prosperity just bought the Bidenomics.com domain name. I can't believe the White House didn't get this first. This would be like Pepsi buying Coca-Cola.com. It's hilarious. Bidenomics.com sets the record straight on the failures of Joe Biden's economy, his horrible record on cost of living, wages, debt, deficits, energy, and more. I've been to the site. I can tell you, it's not what Joe Biden wants Americans to see. AFP takes Biden's own words and compares them to the reality of everyday Americans. It's packed with facts and stories that prove Bidenomics is a costly failure. Americans for Prosperity deserves a lot of credit for this coup. Visit Bidenomics.com soon, the website Joe Biden doesn't want you to see.
Okay, fellas, it's Thursday.
Yep.
So, King of the Hill... And I'm a participant in what feels like a long time. I don't feel like I've been a participant. Probably pre.
Yeah, well,
Hack Madness.
Yeah, Hack Madness put us on hiatus.
Yeah.
You know, so it might have been a little while. But I hear through the grapevine that you've brought some real heat.
Well, generally, I like to challenge myself to try to give the theatrics of something that I feel like needs amplification.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I've just chosen to win.
Oh.
Because what I've got here is it's really something else. I've chosen Cher Meshari.
Oh. Mm.
And Ashbrook as the champion with Jen Rubin.
Jen Rubin.
And this week, we have the Honorable Judge Michael Duncan.
Yes.
And I'm the bailiff.
I think that's fantastic. Guys, I think we should go ringside.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. It's time for King of the Hill. In the blue corner, fighting out of her own Twitter account for a chance to reclaim her crown, Sherry Kami Jacobus. And now, in the red corner, fighting out of the Washington Post and current champion of the world, Jennifer Brain Worms Rubin.
Doesn't it feel like when his guy...
Yeah,
his
I was just going to say this. I'm so glad
he really puts his back into it.
He put his back into it. Really did.
He gives us an extra octave.
Yeah.
It's right.
It's only just and fair that a guy with a voice like that, who has cut, and I would point this out to the listeners, and I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of new listeners who aren't that familiar with this game. John Ashbrook has cut those ringsides live every single episode that we've played King of the Hill for 3 years.
Yes.
There is nothing in the can. This guy does it every, I mean, it's
live, like a pro.
I just got to say, dude, hats off. It's
to the
incredible.
Point where we can't do the game if he's not here.
I know. I know.
Because you don't get the live.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of fun.
Well, despite flattering you, I want to declare that I will be a very fair and honest judge. And it is you first here in round one as defending champion. What do you have for us, Ashbrook?
Okay, exhibit one, please. Nikki. Okay, Jennifer Brainworms Rubin writes under the pseudonym Jennifer Truth over Phony Balance Rubin. Quote, the shortages of ammunition and anti-missile systems for Ukraine meant Russia paid little price for continued aggression. The American Enterprise Institute's Corey Shake tells me that the Ukrainian losses can be counted in bodies, in lost territory, and squandered momentum on the battlefield. Those losses are at least in part attributable to Republicans dithering.
Okay. Okay. What do
sounds
you
like a pretty standard pro-Ukrainian take from my
Bailiff,
standpoint.
Do you want to control this court a little bit?
Nope.
Okay.
He was just going to let that go, and I appreciate it because I am just going to blow this the fuck out of the water and move on. Exhibit 10, please. Hitler also had a flatulence problem. Trump is like Hitler in many ways and admires him.
I mean, this is just... this is out of left field. I mean, the thing is that, like, you have Jennifer Rubin who would spend, like, 3,000 words in the Washington Post trying to write the same thing, and she got right to it.
So, unless...
he's admired. So... It's so good, dude. It might actually be the best one that we've ever had.
Well, so I think we have to explain the context here a little bit. If you, listener or viewer, if your brain hasn't been totally rotted by the internet, and I'm sure you're not a regular MSNBC viewer, there's this new left-wing conspiracy that Donald Trump is farting in court. And so that's sort of the genesis of that take.
Which, to be honest with you, actually your brain does kind of need to be rotted to be aware of that take.
Yeah.
But we make it our job.
Right.
To be aware of the rotted brain take.
Yeah.
And so in context, thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I don't believe it needs a lot of context, though. That Trump is like Hitler in many ways.
No, it certainly doesn't. I just thought I'd explain the flatulence and where that originated from. It really isn't a debate here. Sherry, she's just so rock solid.
Yep.
Well, round one.
All right, I'm going to go for the two-round knockout.
Look at this.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth calling a shot.
Spaghetti, let's put up exhibit 5. Okay, I'll pray for Trump. I pray he rots in prison and then burns in hell.
My God.
I pray his victims are made whole again somehow. I pray the country heals after he's destroyed us.
Amazing.
Period. And by the way, she's quote tweeting the Reverend Franklin Graham. Mm. I don't think that should be missed.
This is so unhinged.
Because, like, just the...
I mean, wow.
Ashbrook, what do you have?
Good luck with that one, Ashbrook.
I'm not even going to look for a third tweet.
I have Exhibit 3, which offers the opposite opinion of
just read it.
President
just read
Trump.
It. Bailiff's not happy. Come on,
Bailiff's
let's get to it.
Not happy.
Exhibit 3.
Thank you, Bailiff.
When the criminal trial actually began, reality hit home. Rather than dominate the proceedings or leverage his court appearance to appear in control and demonstrate no court could corral him, Trump, day by day, has become smaller, more decrepit, and frankly, somewhat pathetic.
Hmm.
The opposite picture.
Well, it's not really close, is it?
Well, so first thing, I wanted to shout out the production team for the new styling of the tweets
that I've noticed here. I think the font size is an important part for
really,
a YouTube audience.
I appreciate it. It makes it very easy for us to read and for you to read there at home. You know, I think Smug sort of alluded to this in round one, but what Jennifer Brainworms Rubin has done is tried to apply her writing to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not without merit. Both of these have been phenomenal takes. The problem is that, like, Sherry's a closer. Like, she comes in from the outfield in the ninth inning, and she comes in and she just throws the fastball.
Yep.
And she throws it, and she throws it again, and she dares you to try to hit it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't hit it because it's the fastest in the game, and that is a two-round knockout.
Boom!
For sure.
Nothing.
I'll be frank with you. You know, I've been hot and cold. I don't play Sherry a lot because I think a lot of her stuff is so crazy that it is what it is. When I saw this shit today, there are three more here that are amongst the three-year history of this game in the top 15 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is shocking material.
Look, Brainworms wasn't bringing her best this week. You know, she had the two others were just as mediocre, and you got to tip the cap to Sherry.
Yeah.
You really do.
Jen Rubin's a great competitor. I just think in this matchup, I think Sherry just matches up.
But that's the thing with Sherry. Sherry has her hot and cold moments too. Yeah. And there, weeks like this, times like this, where we see this content, my only question is, like, Sherry, like, who hurt you? Who hurt you? Why is it that you have to go on Twitter and say these things?
Do you imagine the retweeting Franklin Graham?
Yeah.
With I hope they burn in hell.
Praying someone burns in hell?
Yeah.
It's
insanity.
God. It the is. Vacancy in your heart.
It's vacancy.
It's absolute the dark insanity. Hole. Absolute
Holy
insanity.
Cats.
She's got to get out, touch grass.
Yeah, totally. All right, so on to the next. So we've talked, this is a little bit of serious stuff because I think you ought to know it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a conjecture for since the beginning of the election season about RFK Jr. Mm-hmm. And whether or not, as a Democrat and as a Kennedy, he would be extremely harmful to the Biden candidacy because he would trim some of that vote share that would ordinarily go to Joe Biden that would go to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has been well established that Democrats, and the reason they're running this geriatric, you know, basically cadaver of an incumbent candidate, is because they don't believe that in some critical states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, to a lesser extent Nevada, but certainly Arizona, they don't believe that Donald Trump can get 50 plus one.
Mm-hmm.
They think he can get to 48 or 49. But they don't think he can cross that threshold. And so their whole goal, and you've seen this argued out in the front pages of every newspaper, is to try to eliminate any other name on the ballot because in a head-to-head, the vote's got to go somewhere. And their theory of the case is it would probably go for the cadaver over Donald Trump because his ceiling is what it is. And we've talked about this in the primary. His ceiling is where it is. Like, that's not being negative about Donald Trump. It's just a rock-solid fact. That is what it is. and he's a Kennedy and he's a Democrat and all those things. Mm-hmm. But what has turned out to be the case and is increasingly concerning for an awful lot of Republicans is what Politico reported this week. Republicans are waking up to the reality that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. could sink their standard bearer just as easily as it hurts Joe Biden. After a pair of new polls showed the presence of third-party candidates on the ballot might not necessarily benefit former President Donald Trump. For months, Democrats have been on the defensive over the renegade Kennedy, with Biden surrogates warning openly about the effect Kennedy could have on the election, and the Democrat National Committee going so far as to set up operations solely to counter the threat of third-party independent candidates. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason they're doing that is not just RFK. It's what I just explained. Mm-hmm. A binary choice, they think that they win no matter what. We'll see if they're right or wrong. I don't know. But it's as good a case as you have with a guy with a 35% approval rating, right, destroying our economy, setting ablaze relationships overseas, making everything chaos, opening our borders and everything else. The thing that we've been saying on the Variety program for over a year now is the issue set that gave rise to the RFK presidential campaign in and of itself, mm-hmm, is not a liberal one or a conservative one so much as an absolute distrust one. Mm-hmm. It's primarily around vaccines is where it started. COVID vaccine, but then it morphed into a larger piece of this. And what he did a lot of, like, well, CIA killed my uncle, mm-hmm, type stuff.
Who knows? Maybe.
And there's a pun.
Maybe.
But the galvanization around that sentiment doesn't know partisan bounds. Now, Donald Trump, because he's been an anti-establishment candidate from the moment he came down the escalator, has been the beneficiary of an awful lot of that thought, mm-hmm, process. A constituency that has not voted very frequently over the years. They have been counted as a part of the Trump base. Interestingly enough, definitely not a Republican base. We've seen that play out in midterm elections where they just don't show up for anybody not named Donald Trump. So what we're seeing in a lot of these polls here over the last couple of weeks is it's certainly not a decisive pull off of Biden. And one could argue it has been a significant pull in some states that matter off of Donald Trump. Fellas, what do you think?
Well, I'm not surprised because of what you just said, and the way that RFK has come to prominence is not dissimilar from the way that Trump came to prominence. You mentioned the anti-establishment, but what RFK really did with his anti-vax effort was push a message that the media beat him up for over and over and over again. And while he was being beaten up by the media, he was saying something that so many people believed. And so anytime you have somebody who's rising up in leadership, who is being beat up by the media, sticking up for something that a lot of people feel like they're being lied to about, they're automatically going to think, yeah, that this guy is sticking up for me. Mm-hmm. That's what Trump did in 2015 to great effect, and it's what RFK is doing now. So you can see the attraction, particularly on the right, to RFK, despite the fact that the guy's a lunatic on the climate, a lunatic on so many liberal issues. He has credibility because he fought the media on an issue that mattered to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the Streisand effect, right? So, like, for those who don't know what that means, Barbara Streisand tried to get her house taken off of, like, Google Images, I think, yeah, it was at the time. But her effort to do so just made people more interested in what her house looked like.
Mm-hmm. And where it was,
and
in
where
particular.
It was, in
right.
particular.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody.
And so that's sort of an internet phenomenon now. So
there was like 10 people that actually cared. And she made a deal out of it, and like hundreds of thousands were interested.
Right, right. Yeah. Can you give me that bourbon, by the way?
Oh, I certainly want to try can. That. Martha, this is a Martha Zoller special.
Yeah, brought that to us.
Kentucky.
Yeah. So I think you raise a really good point there, Ashbrook, and, you know, on the issue of COVID and vaccines, like RFK came on the scene at the same time that a lot of conservatives were concerned about censorship, mm-hmm, right? Like on the issue of vaccines and COVID. And so it became right wing in the context of COVID and Trump being president, mm-hmm. right? And so it becomes like right-wing coded, even though RFK is not right-wing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he's benefiting from that. I think the other thing, and this is something people really don't talk about that much, but it's worth pointing out because this is interesting, like subculture online, is it's not just vaccines. It's also lifestyle. Like RFK has a lot of presence with, like, how do I put this? Like alternative food sort of influencer sets, like people who are concerned with like factory farming and like organic farm to table stuff. And like, you know, the industrialization of our food and things like that. Like,
but isn't it just distrust of institution?
That's the larger point. But I guess what I would say to your whole thing of like, you know, does this ultimately impact Trump more than it does Biden? I think it's totally possible that it hurts Donald Trump more. And if you look at some of the data, it looks like it does. But I'm a big believer in politics of like, look at what people are doing and that tells you what they're concerned about. And I got to tell you, I mean, Joe Biden put out a video and did a rally with every member of the Kennedy clan. So clearly it's something that they care about as well, to your point of like they have to eliminate everybody
from
the ballot.
But I think that's a different calculation, right? I mean, I think they see these numbers too. But what the Biden team has concluded is that they know what the cap is for a Trump vote. And if it's bifurcated in any way, you're dealing with subjectivity. Whereas if it's a binary choice, it's an objective analysis, meaning you're going to have 100% of people voting no matter what that electorate looks like. And we are guaranteed that any sort of normal turnout during a presidential election, this guy can't crack 48. Mm-hmm. And if it's a binary choice, they got to go somewhere.
Yeah, I guess I raised that, the whole thing with the rest of the Kennedy clan, as more of a criticism than anything, because like, I don't think anybody's voting for RFK because he's a Kennedy.
Right. I think,
yeah.
Like, unless you live in Massachusetts and you love that name, like,
totally agree.
Like, I don't get the Biden strategy.
There could be some runoff boomer vote.
I guess.
But I also think it's a tactic from 3 or 4 cycles ago. You know, this cycle, people
are getting.
That is
what they are,
people,
by the way.
It's true. But this cycle, people are getting their information from online channels more than they ever have in the past. And that's why RFK, it's not because he went on interviews with CNN mostly. It's because he's talking online to people where they are, on the channels they are. It goes on every podcast. And Michael's point about, you know, people who are trying to get Whole Foods and get out of like the factory farm, you know, diet, like that's just one of the verticals that he's pushing into.
Right.
And so he's meeting people where they are. And the way that we talked with Baker Levitt and Stephen Aaron about how they're trying to get people and advertise to people in different ways. You know, the idea that you're going to reach voters by advertising on broadcast TV is ludicrous, right?
Yeah.
So the idea that you're going to run a campaign that's based on the old rules is ludicrous. He's doing something new.
I mean, he's going on totally non-political podcasts, totally non-political, with like mommy bloggers who talk about food and fitness and just talking about who he is as RFK.
Yeah.
And it's actually incredibly compelling stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Smug.
No, I mean, I think Ashbrook and Duncan hit the nail on the head completely. I think one of the best ways to bolster your credibility is for the mainstream media to try to silence you and attack you, because that kind of like martyrdom adds so much credibility. I mean, we've seen for years how information was suppressed, especially during the previous election cycle, the whole Hunter Biden thing. So I think there's almost like a muscle memory among a lot of folks now. It's like, well, if the media is attacking him, he must be speaking the truth, because that's how bad the censorship had gotten.
Yeah.
One more bit of vegetables before we get to the candy. A bunch of new polls out. These are from Bloomberg. If you wouldn't mind popping up graphic 3 spaghettis. What it says is Arizona, Trump plus 7. Georgia, Trump plus 6. Nevada, Trump plus 8. North Carolina, Trump plus 10. Pennsylvania, Trump plus 1. Wisconsin, Trump plus 4. Michigan is the only swing state in this conversation. Mm. that Joe Biden is winning and he's up but 2 points. Look, fellas, here's I'm gonna bottom line it for you. If Election Day was Tuesday, Donald Trump's the president of the United States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. End of story. What we've talked about a lot on this program is not being irrationally exuberant if you are a conservative voter, because you understand, and I haven't actually had a chance to get my hands on the crosstabs of Bloomberg, so I don't know, but I've looked at a lot of different data sets that have come out from public polls and some private polls, frankly, that show a real lack of consolidation amongst younger, typically Democratic voting bases, people of color, everything else, that seem not to be consolidating at this point. Maybe some of that is what we talked about with the terrorists. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it. But I think it's a bunch of different things, and it's a really hard to relate to a geriatric boomer who's giving you like a—I mean— He's yelling at you at the podium and having no real understanding of what it is that he's talking about.
It's also like just like rubber meets the road stuff. Like when you have your signature piece of legislation as Joe Biden called the Inflation Reduction Act and it hasn't reduced inflation.
Right.
It's tough to make an argument to working class people in this country that you've improved their lives. Yep. It just is.
Yep. No, I think that's entirely right. But don't be fooled by the margins here. They will tighten.
Yep.
No matter what. One, there's a huge spending advantage on the Democratic side. But two, I fully anticipate your crazy left getting on board at some point. I really do. All right, before we get to the variety, I just want to introduce the variety with one thing that we skipped over off the top, which I found just completely hilarious. What was that second clip? Do you guys have that second clip available? I don't have it in front of me. You got it?
In a sense, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted?
Well, I guess every day.
What a perfect encapsulation.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Of this old man.
Yeah. The eyes see it, the mouth can say it, but his brain, there's no activity.
What? More does Donald Trump need to do to prove that we can't be trusted? I don't know, old man.
I'm broken clock.
I guess
that says it all.
Thank you.
I look forward to that and many ads this fall.
I hope that's going to be a great ad.
So, variety. Fellas, you ready for some of this?
Always.
This is right up your alley, Smug. This one, of all things that we've done lately, I feel like is going to set you ablaze.
I saw this. Literally.
Literally. Can we start with the clip? Clip 5, please, Spaghetti.
The Destroyer of Worlds.
For our audio-only listeners, this is a robotic dog that is shooting fire out of its...
Back.
Yeah. It's like if you see
it. It has a legit flamethrower.
It's jumping now.
It jumps. It runs around and it has a laser that it guides its fire shooter by. I mean, look at it.
Yeah. So this is terrific. I mean, my first question is like, is this just like, I hate if it's just like a proof of concept kind of bullshit. Like, is there a website I can start ordering these?
Can I add context?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I think I'm going to answer your question.
Yeah, please.
A company has unveiled a robot dog companion with a flamethrower attached. Throw Flame.
Great company name.
It's called. Terminator.
Great.
They call
name
that
too.
Thing. Is the first ever flamethrower dog.
Yeah.
It's in Ohio based.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Made in America. Ohio based. And it's announced it's $9,420 and it's a robot.
Affordable.
It is it is entirely available for the consumer public, fellas.
Holy cow.
This is available for purchase by the general public and government agencies. Wouldn't it be, I mean, first of all, they do a lot of good in Colombia. For the first time, the Terminator can be remotely operated by Wi-Fi or or Bluetooth to fire jets up to 30 feet.
Wow.
So I want to get two of these for my house.
Front door and back door?
Yeah, just monitor it, you know? Like, this beats, to me, a Ring camera.
Right. Yeah.
Because, like, you're going to show me the criminal. I don't want to see him. I want to see him dead.
Flame throwing.
Like, I don't want to see my door being kicked in and the guy robbing us. Yeah. Like, that's not great footage.
What I want to make sure is that Throw Flame, who built the Terminator, has built into these robots some sort of like loitering and like crime prevention component to it, so that like he can just sort of roam the hallway of your apartment complex and make sure all threats are eliminated. I feel like that's really important. I
mean, he has to demonstrate his strength at some point. Like, they need to light something innocent on fire just to make sure they're sending a message.
Yeah, but how do you keep him from burning up the Amazon Prime guy?
Well, I mean, it's a very good question, John.
I think
that sends a message to your wife.
So initially, I thought, like, you know how, like, if you have a home security system, like, your insurance prices go down. So I don't think that would work here.
It's a financial decision.
So that's the one problem is, like, I don't think that would work here because, like, you know, the damn insurance company is going to be like, well, it could burn your house down. But, like, I think this would be extremely effective. It beats having just like a ADT sign on your yard.
Yeah.
Like, when I've seen people's, you know, on their front fence, it says, like, we have guns here. Like, no one's going to fuck around there. But yeah, if they see that, like, doing laps, that's a whole nother level of deterrence.
It's just spitting a fireball every once in a while. It's like, what's up?
Yeah, just check.
Like, some kid crosses the road too quick, and it's like, oh.
Well, I really... I'd want to be assured that there was some sort of like Ring camera component to this as well, so I could like.
You want to watch it do its work.
I want to watch.
Yeah, well, it says this is my favorite part about this because like it's obvious what it does.
Yeah,
it's a dog that's robotic that connects to your phone and everything else, and it kills things, and it shoots fire 30 feet. 30 feet, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like a pretty significant fire flame. But they also add components that it's useful for.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a marketing thing. It's like, well, if you're concerned about wildfire control and prevention, it's there for you too.
Yeah, the government agencies thing makes sense now, I guess.
Yeah, or even clearing snow and ice from your driveway.
Oh, come on, that's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
It just sets your driveway on fire.
Every Midwestern kid's going to ask for this for Christmas.
Yeah. So that thing just shows up.
I mean, the thing pays for itself. You know, like whenever it snows in your neighborhood, $20 a driveway, the dog's got it covered.
I mean, fuck the snowblower.
It pays for itself.
Right. You got a flamethrower.
It would help boomers.
It's a moneymaker.
And all you do is set it outside and let it go do its business.
That's it.
Yeah, no more.
Intimidates the neighborhood.
No more heart attacks. No more heart attacks. No more hurting your back, shoveling snow, robot flamethrower.
I mean, also, like, think of, like, the level of mic drop of when you invite your friends over, you know, for a barbecue, and that's the thing that sparks the grill.
Yeah.
Right?
It jumps up because it says in the description that it avoids obstacles and leaps through the air.
He's so sick.
And it has a laser guided sighting.
Because, like, there's so many grill dads, but, like, who's got the robot dog sparking it off?
We're not at all concerned, though, that, you know, in the robot uprising, this is like a.
No, I'm extremely concerned by it.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
I'm extremely concerned by it. But I will say clearing the driveway is not a bad deal.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Can we get the clip of Alec Baldwin? Alec Baldwin, this is clip 6.
You please say free Palestine one time. Why did you kill that lady?
Why did you kill?
You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec?
Sorry.
No jail time, Alec.
He's on the phone.
You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time. And I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone. I swear. Fuck Israel. Fuck Zionism. Please say it.
He's just standing there.
One time.
Could you give me one quick favor?
Oh!
Yeah.
The no-look camera slap.
I respect it.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing is... So much, you've seen it when they chain themselves to cement blocks in the streets. It's like there's a better form of protest than trying to ruin people's lives. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's what they've come to. It's like, I just want to make you miserable. And that's the thing is, we had, oh, goodness, his name escapes me. He just wrote that great new book of where he, like, talked to these people. And we had him on last week.
Oh, Jesse Waters.
Jesse Waters. so many of these people are just like mentally damaged, and they want everyone else to feel their same pain. This is a prime example.
I'm glad you said that, Smug, because what I found most fascinating about the clip is that she's begging him to say free Palestine and proceeds to insult him and be like, you should be in prison.
Yeah.
But then keeps saying, please, please say it.
Like you're being polite.
Like this is a person being polite.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
what a whack job.
Mm-hmm. Can I have a very controversial take?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I like Alec Baldwin.
No.
That's a terrible take.
I do.
No.
Horrible take.
Because here's the thing. I know he's a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. I know he's a scumbag. I know he is, like, you know, from an ideological standpoint, everything I don't like. I know that. But so is Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm. And I don't like Springsteen either.
I think that's fair.
He's one of the few bad boomers.
If people choose their artists based on their political affiliation, you're going to come up pretty thin.
I want to hear a guy with a terrible voice complain about a factory in New Jersey shutting down.
Hold on.
Oh, my God.
Got better things to do with my time. Springsteen sucks.
That's a
horrible
take.
Horrible dude.
That is.
I thought I was going to have the controversial take. That is way more controversial.
Way more controversial.
Everyone knows in their heart Springsteen sucks.
Oh, my God.
Complaining about a factory shutting down with a terrible voice.
Yeah, that's it.
But here's what I like about the dude. I never understood how everybody, like conservatives, all jumped ugly about this set thing where he shot some gal. Like, it's not like he fucking tried to shoot the person.
Yeah,
like,
he did.
Could they have been more careful on set? Sure, they could have been more careful. Should he have been more responsible? Sure, he could have been. But it's not like this guy's a murderer for crying out. He did. He's an actor for Christ's sake.
He's a killer.
You know, argument could be made that maybe he was a little too negligent. Yeah, I don't know. Look. I think the only thing redeemable about this guy is that great speech he gives in Glengarry Glen Ross.
That's what I'm saying. I think that captured me at a young age, and I've just been sort of like fascinated by it ever since. But he also did in that clip exactly what you would imagine a person to do, is they sit and they take it.
Yeah.
For like 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, insulted, screamed at, and then he's like, you know what, fuck it, you're getting it, you know, and he just like gives her a jab, just a quick jab to the face.
But what's fascinating is, like, there are people on the left who look at that and be like, wow, she's a victim. You know what I mean?
God,
and it's like, who's actually the fucking bully in that situation?
Totally.
You, the quote-unquote peace protester, or Alec Baldwin? He's the fucking victim.
I'm just telling you, I respect it. I respect it. All right, so we have to get to our interview with Martha Zoller.
I want to welcome to the program Martha Zoller from WDUN Radio in Georgia. She is a great friend of the program, and we are very lucky to have her today. She has heard statewide around Georgia and has for many years. Martha, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here. Now, I got to ask you one question before we start.
Oh, boy.
What is the program? Where did
everybody
that come from?
Everybody says that. We like to make fun of affectation.
Ah.
Yeah.
And
we also say Tuesday.
Say Tuesday, Monday.
Monday.
Tuesday and Thursday. Affectation has always been something we've been interested in.
Okay, good.
Right? And so program, I don't know, it's a little sophistication.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Feels like my house growing up. I have three sons and a daughter. So she was the first girl in 97 years. So she's very spoiled.
Yeah, we're used to having a lot of inside jokes, and we're not used to having to explain them. You know, it's just like
that's the way guys are,
right? Like when you have friends, you do weird things sometimes, and it just becomes the way you do things because it's funny, and it's only funny to you. And
that is it.
Yeah, right. I feel like every friend group, especially guys, have stuff like that. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Girls are not that way, but boys are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think we are.
Get three boys together, doesn't matter what age they are, trouble is going to happen.
Yeah. Well,
they could be 3, 40, or 60. Trouble's going to happen.
Yeah, so
hosting a podcast.
Amanda in our office makes this point all the time, and that is like, it's just like when there's only guys around with each other, they have a tendency to like self-radicalize and get weirder and crazier. And so she keeps us level-headed in the office, which I think is an important thing.
Everyone needs that.
Yeah.
We do.
But you come up to Washington, D.C., all the way from Georgia, and there is a lot going on in Georgia this year. Everybody's hoping that we can turn that state around and bring it back to the Republican side in the presidential election. I'm wondering if you think that's possible.
Oh, it's definitely possible. I think what's interesting is we're getting just the whole world's looking at us. Mm-hmm. The BBC's doing a documentary on Georgia and what's going on in Georgia. And I think it's so interesting because we shouldn't be where we are right now. There was, if you got to go all the way back to that runoff in 21, when 400 and some thousand Republicans thought they were going to teach everybody a lesson by staying at home and not voting. Well, the lesson we got taught is we lost the Senate and we got into a mess.
Do you think that don't vote because it won't count anyway was a great closing message in that particular campaign?
No. And look, if you look at the details, the former president went to Dalton and Valdosta. And that's where the vote was the most suppressed.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, it was a real problem. But you're an expert on this. And obviously, our contention here on the Variety program is that there is no way to win a national election as a Republican without the state of Georgia. Period. End of story. It doesn't matter what other combination you have. Everything is in the 20% or less without the state of Georgia.
Absolutely. And then we went on to 22, where Governor Kemp, who I worked for a period of time, as well as he's been on the program a lot and I've known him for 25 years, is that he found that way, even better than Glenn Youngkin did it, to kind of thread that needle, because he was being attacked by President Trump. He never responded. And now they've kind of reached this detente where they're not really talking about each other. The governor said he's going to vote for him. And he didn't, but you don't see him at the Trump events or any of that. And he had a big election. This is hard to say because I know there's a lot of people who support Trump, and I'm eventually going to, and we're going to talk about that, I'm sure. But he did a lot better, Governor Kemp did, without Donald Trump's help than he did with Donald Trump's help in 2018. So did Ron DeSantis.
So what are some of the things that you think the Trump campaign can do to sort of adopt what Kemp did that was so successful in Atlanta and some of the collar counties?
I think you heard a lot of it with your interview with Michael Whatley, the new RNC chair. I've had him on the program,
Wasn't he great?
It was a great interview. Yeah. I've had him on, too. And he is talking in the right way. He's talking about getting the vote out. He's talking about reaching groups of voters that we haven't reached out to. You know, it's Baker Levitt, I think y'all had on a few weeks ago, that was talking about that also. So that's where we got to do. We got to get people out to vote. It's very simple. You need to vote, you need to parent your children, and you need to have face-to-face meetings with people. And one of the things that Whatley is really pushing is this five-minute conversation. You got to have a five-minute conversation because, as you know, primary voters are not normal voters. Okay, they're voters that are going to be there no matter what. The people we got to worry about are the ones that might leave it blank or not vote. And they're the people that don't go to primaries.
That's right. That's incredible. I mean, look, it's insightful. It's also, look, I mean, Georgia's changed a little bit over the years. Populations, demographics, all kinds of different things. But the basis of what is going on in Georgia is happening throughout this country, in that you've got a suburban population, collar counties around Atlanta, that are conservative, definitely economically conservative, but conservative overall, center-right voters that were with Republicans for the better part of the 10, 15 years, has sort of pulled back on an awful lot of that. Kemp re-energized that basically because of his tenure as governor.
Well, and he also is a girl dad, and he women voted for him. And Johnny Isaacson was like that too.
He
Johnny
was
Isaacson,
a wonderful human being,
would poll, or he would, the actual voting would be 6-10% better than the average Republican, and it was mainly among women. Because, as he told me one time, he said, I had 3,000 1099, mostly female employees at Northside Realty, and I had to learn how to get along with women. And so so he was great at all of that. And so was Brian Kemp. So is Brian Kemp. So he was did a much better job. I mean, look, I am, I call them squishy Republican women, okay? And they are, they voted for Clinton one time, then they voted for Bush. in 04 because they were security moms, mm-hmm. and then they voted for Obama in 12 because they liked him through the, you know, through that, but he didn't win the state, but they voted more for him. Mm-hmm. This shift back and forth has been happening among these suburban women for a while, and we've got to be able to talk to them. And I underestimated the impact of abortion in the 2022 election, mm-hmm. and the abortion issue. And I think that even among pro-life women like me, mm-hmm. they felt the Democrats did a good job of convincing them that there was something at stake there.
Mm-hmm. So what's the issue there? I'm curious, because in a state like Georgia with a governor, you know, like Brian Kemp, who is an unapologetic conservative on the issue of life, you know, is it a messaging thing? Like what is the issue with abortion as you see it? Is it a messaging thing, and who's the messenger? Is it the policy? Is it all those things in concert? I'm curious because, I mean, Georgia is one of the places, you know, where I think he passed a heartbeat bill.
Yes.
In Georgia. Still had, you know, phenomenal success, which is
sort
of like...
It was the only place that was sort of immune to the legislative inaction post-Dobbs.
Yeah, you've seen these other, like, ballot issues in places like, I think, Kansas, or, like, the state Supreme Court race up in Wisconsin, where it looked like there's blowback to the pro-life argument. I'm curious, like, what is it that you see in Georgia as it relates to that?
Well, it's the law's been tied up in the courts, mm-hmm. and it pretty much hasn't gone into effect, so we haven't seen as much of the impact there. And basically, the legislators have said, we're going to wait until we know what we're dealing with before we do anything else. And so they have been able to keep social conservatives kind of at bay on that particular issue in that way, and finding the balance. Even in the most recent session, there were two big social conservative issues, and it was sports betting, mm-hmm. which I could argue both ways very convincingly, and RFRA. And we voted sports betting down, but we also voted RFRA down. So they gave social conservatives what they wanted on sports betting, and also didn't get what they wanted on RFRA. So it's that balance.
RFRA is
Religious Freedom.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Act. And I just think that Brian Kemp does a much better job communicating on this issue, but Nikki Haley, who talked about this the most eloquently of anybody mm-hmm. in the primary, really laid it out from a pragmatic view. So she was a female making the case, but also was very pragmatic about it. Hey, we got one seat in the House. Mm-hmm. We don't control the Senate. We don't control the presidency. It's kind of a moot point. Here's the way we need to talk about it. And she brought something to it that I think resonated.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're unabashed Brian Kemp fans.
So are we. So
here,
am I.
Here on the program. And I think the thing that is quite obvious about what he was able to accomplish was get a whole bunch of constellations of conservative voters across Georgia to sort of join together and not have this sort of internecine warfare. And it seemed like it, at least in 22, sort of temporarily healed what was a massive internal fight in the Republican Party in Georgia after the 2020 election. I'm curious, like, is that healed, or are we still dealing with stuff?
I think it's pretty healed, and I think it's a lot to do with Brian Kemp, because he, for 20 years, was going to every farm bureau in whatever position he held, whether he was a state senator, and then he was out of office for a while. He ran for ag commissioner and lost. He then ran for secretary of state and won, and then ran for governor. But you can go into any farm bureau office or any chamber office, and there is some iteration of a Brian Kemp business card on that receptionist bulletin board. Mm-hmm. And he drove around in this car that everybody knew. And he just is this guy that does the work. I mean, mm-hmm. he is a hardworking guy. And if you look at his appointments, one of the reasons why he did so well, he didn't just pay back Republicans that worked for him in his appointments. His appointments come from all across. And that's also a fixture of growing up in Athens. When you grow up in Athens, which is the blue dot in the big red sea, you learn how to get along with everybody.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, yeah. That's fascinating.
Well, Brian Kemp's not the only fixture in the state of Georgia. Martha Zoller is also a fixture in the state of Georgia. You've been on the radio for a very long time, and Georgia's lucky for that. You still do 2 hours of radio a day and an hour-long podcast, and I'm just wondering, you've seen a lot of changes in the media over the years and on TV and local media. What do you think? Do you think that radio as we all sort of grew up listening to Limbaugh, we grew up listening to Hannity, grew up listening to Martha Zoller, do you think radio will continue, will it be around 10 years from now, 20 years from now, in the way it has been in the past?
Well, it's obviously going to change. My company just celebrated 75 years in business, and he has stayed committed, the Jacobs family, now in its fourth generation running the company. They have stayed in 24-hour news. We have 24-hour news. We don't let Atlanta gobble us up. We do our own news, and we have staffing in the newsroom 24/7. That took a commitment by the Jacobs family to do that. They started an online newspaper in 1999 when nobody knew what a digital ad was. Yeah, I mean, it was like, how do you make money off of an online newspaper? Well, now we make money off of it, but it's because they stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And he, if it weren't a family-owned company, they couldn't have made those decisions. Right. So Jay is a visionary. His dad was a visionary. So will radio stay the same? It won't stay the same because it's changed. But apps on iPhones has helped radio. Everybody's been talking about the demise of radio for 30 years.
Yep.
And you're still going to want to know how your high school football team goes. Mm-hmm. Does. You're still going to want to know if your school's closed that day. You're still going to want to know certain things that you can only hear on a radio newscast when you're in the car with the kids.
Right.
I mean, sometimes at the top of the hour, you got to flip away from the Ruthless podcast and then see what the news is.
Well, it's a damn
and then
shame,
come back.
Martha. It's a damn shame. But understand, like events, they do require some attention.
That's right.
Well,
John always knows when I'm listening to the Ruthless podcast because I'm texting him while I'm listening.
Literally sitting there, and she's getting
sorry. He's sorry. Yeah. He's given me his number, but that's all right.
Not sorry.
Oh, and
all.
The other thing about Brian Kemp, he's got the same cell phone number he's had since the beginning, and he answers those text messages.
I feel like you're breaking some news on
that. He's great.
Yeah, no.
I won't give out the number though.
No, please don't.
You'll have to find it yourself.
Martha, we have three questions we ask every single guest, and we'd like to ask you those same three questions. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to my pal Josh Holmes, who's very good at asking.
Well, I mean, for the first one, you're a Georgia gal, obviously. And our question is, if you could plan your last meal on Earth, what would it be?
So my husband and I go to what we like to call old people date night every Friday night.
Yeah? Nice.
It's more like afternoon. It's like 4:30 to like 7. And
early bird specials?
Early bird specials, let me tell you. So the cheeseburger and steak fries from Poor Richard's in Gainesville would be my last meal.
I like specificity with that.
Yeah, I do too.
It's not only the meal, it's where.
It's where, that's right.
Okay, that's great. So listen, you've spent your entire career. I mean, you've done a bunch of things in politics. You spent an inordinate amount of time on radio, informing the public, public personality. If you were to erase all of that and just look back on your career with total blue sky, and you could fill it with anything you want, with the benefit of the knowledge that you have now, what would you do?
So in 2017, I went back to school and studied American politics and did women's electoral success in the Republican Party. That's what my thesis was on. And I took American presidents in January of 2017. Hillary had just lost, and I worked for David Perdue, so they all hated me in that class. And so I said to them, I'm Martha Zoller, I work for David Perdue, and I'm happy Hillary Clinton lost because my dad told me I was going to be the first woman president, and there is still hope. And they laughed. And by the end of the semester, they looked at me as someone who was going to help them get a job. And so I'd like to be president of the United States. If I could do anything.
There you go.
Yeah,
I would want to be president of the United States. My dad's been telling me since I was this high, you're going to be the first woman president. It's funny, though, because my oldest sister was a really good swimmer. My brother was a pitcher. My youngest sister was a runner. I couldn't do anything, so I was going to be president of the United States.
Yeah, by necessity at some level. Now, listen, if you can imagine it, you can do it.
That's right. Right. That's
what we tell our kids anyway. All right, so the third question, you know these well, thrill of victory, agony of defeat. I don't even need to explain it to you because you know exactly what it is that this means.
Agony of defeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never think I'm good enough. I never think I've done enough. I never think, you know, I just, that's what drives me. That's what wakes me up at 3 a.m, you know, getting ready for stuff. So
it's a fun question though, right?
Yeah.
And you actually learn a lot about people from it. I mean, it's, you also learn when people don't answer the question, you know, when people are like, well, yeah, I'm a thrill of victory, quite obviously, because I'm always thinking about the optimistic side of things. Then you look at them, you're like, I don't buy it.
It drives you. You know, you got to have something that drives you, that wants you to get up every morning.
Yeah.
And I love what I do, but I also have a great husband who is not intimidated by me and has always, you know, because I'm not easy. And he's always, whatever I want to do is great with him, you know? And so we just always had a deal that he made the living and I made the living easy. And so, and then my sons have told him that no one's ever going to get that deal again. But
true. I think we can all attest.
That's right.
I think
we can all attest. When I went back to work, I got to build this career all after I raised my family. I mean, I did it before I had kids, but then I took like 10 years off and then I came back again.
Was it hard getting back into it?
Yeah, it was hard. I made $25 a show when I first went back to
radio. Is that
right?
Mm. Per show,
$25 a show.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a tough way to make it. So, but I'm curious, before we let you go, I mean, you get back, it's a leap of faith at some level. You're like, I've been out of the game for a while. I think I can still do this. You jump back in. Children grown up. It's got to be a real nerve-wracking experience.
Yeah, and they're all grown and gone, and everybody's good. They don't understand why I still have to go to work. You know, it's like, we got grandkids now. Can't you just drop everything and be there? But I do that, too. I try to get all that stuff in, too. I've got 6 grandchildren, and they're wonderful, and we had them all at the house this past weekend, and it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. No, I mean, listen, just being committed to and giving you purpose, and we can tell by listening to your show and the amount of time that you spend talking to people and trying to figure out what's going on. It's unmistakable. And it's something that's sorely lacking in public information, conservative media.
Our ideas are better.
Yeah.
I am not afraid to have people on that disagree with me because our ideas are better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you give people a chance to talk about it, and just because you talk to a liberal doesn't make you a liberal, okay? But you need to talk to them because that's how you win them over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how you get to them. So.
Yeah. That's a lost art today. Lost art today, but we're glad you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and we're glad you came here
thank
to spend
you.
Some time with us at the Ruthless Podcast. Martha Zoller, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll be listening.
Take care. You know, Martha is great. She is ubiquitous in Georgia, and we're lucky that she came on the show today.
Yeah, I mean, she's great, and we're going to be talking to her a lot more because obviously Georgia matters a whole lot, and she has got her ear to the ground on all of that. Also, just a fabulous person. Just a really good person. Great to have on the program, the kind of people we like to hang out with here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do something a little bit different before we close out here. Mm. We're going to bring back 5 stars.
For excellent.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, I better.
5 stars.
Okay.
We haven't done this in a very long time, and I blame Wolf primarily.
Yep.
Because you know he likes the meat. You know how he likes the meat.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So we also should explain, since it's been a while for our new listeners, this is for folks on Apple Podcasts. You leave a 5-star review. The really interesting ones we'll read. So there you go.
But also, if you're on YouTube, we're going to start incorporating those comments as well. So feel free to comment away on anything you love or hate. And we'll give it a shout
out. I think today's are from YouTube. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember, get on there. Subscribe now if you haven't yet.
Yep. All right, let's do it. So, Smash, you got the first one. We always start with a voice.
Okay, so this first one comes from Redfisher9, titled So Bright and So Funny. 401 episodes. Fellas, way to consistently deliver. Sometimes the vegetables are hard to take, maybe too inside baseball, but the candy is always the payoff. Thank you so much for 2 times a week plus bonus episodes. Grateful for them all.
What a kind note. Redfisher9. Love every minute of that. Dunks, what do we got?
Wow. I would just want to point out here at the top, I didn't select this one for myself. This is from Slick Grace.
Wait, you...
What do you mean?
No, I didn't. I didn't select this for myself.
There's production shenanigans going on?
Wolf selected it.
Production shenanigans.
Mm. Okay, well, let's hear what you got.
The title is Grateful to the Old Man.
Oh, of course.
Come
Jesus.
On. Jeez, dude.
Yes.
Not only did you pick it, you wrote it.
As an OG listener, this is my first.
Is this your mom again?
No, it's not.
It might be.
It's not. I talked to her last night.
Does she have a burner?
No, she's mad at me about all the boomer stuff, so I don't think she'd probably be submitting another one.
All right.
As an OG listener, this is my first 5-star review, and it took a hard conversation on abortion to get me there, which is why I appreciate the fellas. Come for the laughs, stay for the truth-telling from Republican operatives who understand the real politique of our times, but also get real about their positions. I'm so grateful to Duncan for saying the hard truths. That as pro-lifers, we want to win elections, but it's hard to have a discussion about how many babies we are okay with dying. Parenthetical. And for what reasons, like sex selection and eugenic killing of disabled children in utero. These guys illustrate what it means to operate in good faith in an increasingly big tent for conservatives. And that's why they are my must-listen podcast. Keep it up, fellas. Like Rush, you give us a broad swath of Americans hope for our country.
Mm. Listen.
Very thoughtful.
That's some slick grace. Thank you.
About as good a review as you can get. I don't like all the credit for the old man on that. But other than that, I can get over that.
No, I'll take all the credit. I deserve it.
I can get over that. Smugglesworth, what do you got?
So this is from, I believe it's BirgitLax9754. It says, listen to you guys on the Megyn Kelly podcast and liked what I heard. Thanks for the common sense and the laughs subscribed. Thank you so much. And thanks to Megyn Kelly. Like, so many of her listeners have hopped on over here.
Such a good friend.
And thanks for subscribing.
Yeah.
Totally. And if you haven't done that yet, punch that button. That's an important one.
Yeah. Do it for your own benefit, but it also helps us find new people, too. And if you like what we say here and would like more people to listen, doing that stuff's really important.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's all black box.
They got algorithms. They got all this bullshit. So, like, the more support you can give for the show by liking, you know, the episode and subscribing to the channel, even if you don't go on YouTube every other episode or once a month or whatever, just doing it helps us, you know?
That's exactly
And we appreciate
right.
it.
We appreciate it immensely. All right, so they've given me one today.
Mm. Wow.
Which typically hasn't been done, but I think it's appropriate here. It's entitled Expletives When Necessary from Rider 701. Fellas, do not let Smug police your language. Whether you speak fluent trucker with a sailor accent or just sprinkle it in an expletive when needed, you do it when something got you riled up, and rightfully so.
And I got to say, like, we had that discussion a couple weeks back of, like, do our listeners agree with me that we need to cut back on the expletives or not? We'll let the YouTube comments and replies decide. And, hey, the majority of them said let the expletives fly. The people have spoken.
Plus, they want the horny segments back, so we're starting to work on that, too. Anywho, another big week for the variety program, fellas. I think we did it.
I think so. Absolute banger of an episode. Gentlemen, thank you so much to all our listeners, and thank you so much, Martha, for coming by on the show today. Absolute banger of an episode. So, until next time, minions, keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs. We'll see you on Tuesday. Stay ruthless.